Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
You know it. Michael is back tonight.
Oh.
It is time for the Mom and Michael Hour. It's my favorite hour of the night. My son, Michael Battle, all the way from Los Angeles. We talk movies and so much more. So get ready. Sit back. Are you ready? Oh, I love this song. Turn it up, Brendan. Hey! That's a little K-pop, by the way. So, Michael Battle, how you doing, darling?
I am fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing well. You know, after that earthquake hit this past week in San Francisco and Hawaii, wasn't that this past week?
I believe it was this past week, and I think some friends of mine may have actually felt that earthquake in parts of Los Angeles. I slept through it.
In parts of Los Angeles?
Well, yeah, because there was an earthquake. I had a few friends, one on the west side, maybe someone else a bit more north or in the valley. People on Facebook in the general L.A. area, which, of course, is very large, said that they felt an earthquake early in the morning. I'm not sure what day that was, but it was earlier last week. And point is, I didn't feel a thing. I was sound asleep.
Of course,
didn't know what happened until I saw it on social media.
You know, your Auntie Janice called, or no, she texted us, and she was like, "Oh my gosh, earthquake woke us up this morning. I mean, it kind of like threw us out of bed." I was like, "Whoa." But then it ended really quickly, thank goodness. But you know, you people in California, y'all know how to just kind of go, "Oh, okay, that was probably what, a 4.5. We're all right."
It ends up that way, but in the moment, they're terrifying. And, of course, we can't forget that one time I was on with you.
That's right.
And an earthquake happened. Mid-sentence, I was talking to you, and my whole apartment just began to sway back and forth. And it's a little unreal at first. I mean, you're standing there thinking, okay, maybe that was just a truck outside going by or something like that. And then your brain adjusts to the idea that you're actually moving back and forth. All of you, everything around you is moving. And then you're hey, I live in Los Angeles and this is an earthquake, part of your brain kicks in. And then you have to decide, is this bad enough to run through a door? Should I go under a table?
I'm naked at the same time. Oh, I'm naked. I might not want to run to the door.
Exactly. And by the time you get through all those thoughts, it's like you hope it hasn't gotten worse. So the one that happened when I was on with you, thankfully, was a slow one where it kind of started off real slow, rocking back and forth. It rolled, as they say. Yeah. And it got stronger, and the swaying went back and forth. The problem with those is that sometimes they build and get worse, and then, you know, buildings start swaying so much they start collapsing. But the ones that are really terrifying are the ones, like I'm assuming Aunt Janice felt up north recently, where it's a really strong jolt, right, as opposed to a sway. Everything just shakes violently and intensely, and they're loud, and they're frightening, and it just, though there's nothing fun, there's nothing interesting about those, and you don't have time to go through any of that thought process,
right,
I just described, because you're just terrified. And if you're asleep, you jump out of bed. If you're watching TV, you just jump up because it's like someone is banging on your entire house or apartment with hammers everywhere. I mean, they're just so loud and terrifying.
Yeah, and it's really about how far you are from the epicenter, how deep it was into the earth. And, you know, it's just like the one in Hawaii was, what, 7.8 miles? It was a 7.8 earthquake, but it was 30 miles into the earth or something like that. And so thank goodness they didn't have a tsunami and that sort of thing. But, Michael, can I just say that there are natural disasters around the world. Every place in the world has a natural disaster of some sort, whether it's plagues of insects, you know, you think it's like biblical proportions, or whether it's, you know, blizzards and water, you know, floods and that sort of thing. Every place,
yeah, as I've said before, it's all those things, earthquakes and typhoons, Trump, you know, all these things, disasters that we have to try to be prepared for and work through.
And we are working through it.
We are working through it.
Hey,
correct.
Michael, here's one of the things I'm really excited about. You know, the Women's March that happened again last Saturday, right?
Yes.
And it even spilled over into Sunday. It kept going. And there were some cities that had, you know, a bunch of women that were out there. It was so exciting to see that there was some success to this year as well, like it was after the inauguration last year. And you just kind of, you kind of watch it unfold. And I heard a woman on the news say, you know, at first we marched, now we run, because there are thousands of women who have signed up to run for office. And
wow.
Knowing that, who do you think is the next group of people that will realize, you know, that this is really where we need to be? We need to run for office. Do you think it's the LGBT community? Do you think it's the immigrant community? What do you think?
It's an interesting question, because I'm not sure if we should be asking who's going to step up next, but more how can we all step up together. I think we eventually are going to have to move away from one group at a time having some sort of epiphany as to how terrible a situation is, and having that one group save an election or a city or the country or change the zeitgeist in a way that moves us toward positive change. This should be a more collective sense across all of America. We should all feel compelled to not only just vote, but to stay involved in politics and to run for office. And it shouldn't just be, oh, well, I'm part of the Me Too, or I'm black, or I'm LGBTQIA, or I'm Hispanic, or I have a conscience. It shouldn't just be those, you know, individual groups against Trump or whomever else. I think on both sides, we should just say, hey, I have the option to run for office, and that option should be taken seriously at all times. And if I want to gripe about something, rather than posting long things on Facebook, maybe consider what that will look like if you got more active with it. Now, I'm saying this knowing what you're about to say to me. I just laid a trap for myself, and you're going to come right back and say, great, when are you going to run for office, Michael? Okay,
yeah.
Mom.
I would like to say that. And I said to myself, don't ask him, when are you going to run for office? I mean, really, I should not ask you that question. When are you going to run for office? So I'm not going to ask you that question. However, I do want to say, on the back of what you just said, The key for me then, if we are going to do that, where we forego the labels, you know, no more is it just the African Americans, no more is it just the Tea Partiers or the poor or whatever, then we would need to change the way Congress does business. We need to change that we vote for congressional leaders per district. You know, erase all the lines, and we choose leaders that represent the entire country.
I don't think that that's at the core. I'm not sure if that's entirely possible. I mean, we choose leaders because it is impossible to have all of our voices have voices in politics. So you pick a person to do the best they can to speak for the collective good of that particular area. Obviously, the county and voting lines drawn are often unfair, and there's, of course, many conversations out there about that and how to fix that process. I think the lines can be good as long as they're fairly drawn, because they in theory, they're supposed to help those elected rep their voices more appropriately. But yeah, I'm not sure if going for a version of the system where it's like, oh, we just, you know, don't have elected officials, or we just all have a voice, that seems too simplistic for me. And I just think it's more about making sure that our current system, with all of its many flaws, is able to correct itself when wrong happens, as opposed to trudging forward deeper into the, you know, mired pit that it can get into.
Well, I think, unfortunately, it was, you know, you see movies that show natural disasters that really bring Americans and the world together. You know, the constituents that we used to have aren't the constituents anymore, or the countries that we used to fight with all of a sudden open their doors to us, that sort of thing. And when you see movies like that, you say to yourself, it really is sports teams and disasters, natural disasters that bring us together in the world as well as in the country. And so I do believe that there's a way that we can vote for leaders who represent all of Americans and all of the groups, make them know what they need to know about every state, the cities in those states. You know, it would be a completely different learning curve in order to get the right people in there. But can you imagine having a Congress that was not just working for their group of people in their district, right? What if they're working for the American people, period?
I could imagine that, and I don't want to poo-poo that idea. That sounds wonderful. I just think that human nature and the concept of representing and being the voice for so many others is never that simple, and it's layered and flawed.
But it's not simple now. It's just as difficult now.
True, but I think it doesn't necessarily get easier because there's power and money and influence involved, and these people aren't doing this for free. It isn't like a volunteer service. You can make a career doing this. And it comes with often great accolades and fame and fortune, and then you can launch from there. I mean, this is still America, and these people are pursuing their careers. So when I'm at work, I'd love to say that I'm in the office, and everyone in the entire company worldwide makes the same amount of money, and we're all just there because we want to do great work, and that's the extent of what we do there. No, it's a business. The business is there to make money. We want to cut out all of our competitors, and we make them our enemies because we want to do better than them. And internally, we're all working hard, not because we just want to do so, maybe in part, yes, but we're working hard because we get paid to do so, and we want to make more money and receive accolades for that good work and move up in the company. And we want to be the best we can and rise to the top, and that mentality permeates all of American culture, especially in politics. So if that's the base upon which we're going to build our system, it's hard to say, they'll be the voice of everyone and they'll always make the best choices for all people. That doesn't seem realistic when it's layered on top of the system of growth and power and money that I just described.
Well, maybe we can make it where every district has a little bit of everyone in it, from the very wealthy to the poorest. And we should have all of that in every district so that the people that represent those areas have to speak to all of those constituents. And then we'd still accomplish what I just suggested. By the way, when you become a congressman, I'm really looking forward to that, son. You don't have to run if you don't want to run, but I'm looking forward to you becoming either a senator.
Oh, I see. So I don't run for office. I manifest into the position. I'm just appointed. Congressman appointed. No, that was clever because technically you did not ask.
I did not ask.
When I would run, you simply said when you are.
Okay, I better take a break and let you breathe on that. You are listening to the Mom and Michael Hour. I'm your host with my son, Michael Battle, all the way from Los Angeles. We'll be back in just a moment.
Radio.com.
It's 10:23 here at WCCO. Welcome back to the Mom and Michael Hour. My son, Michael Battle, joins us all the way from Los Angeles. He has a degree in film and television production, and he is also my film critic. Before we talk film, though, we got to talk about the Grammys tonight. Television, man, here's the deal. That is Bruno Mars we just heard from, Michael. And, of course, I think he racked up at least 5 Grammys. Am I correct?
Yes, Album of the Year.
He got Album of the Year with 24 Karat?
24 Karat Magic, there it is.
Oh, wow. Were you surprised at that?
Yeah, I'm not. I mean, that when I first heard that song, I actually wasn't too impressed. I was like, okay, this song kind of seems like, we've heard him do this thing before, whatever else. And about the sixth time I heard it, it just got stuck in my head. I was humming it, and now here we are. So that whole album is just so much fun. His performances are extraordinary. I mean, he really is, as you've mentioned many times, becoming a superstar. And he's exciting to watch. He's exciting to hear on the radio, just in how he sings the songs themselves. So I appreciate it. I also feel like I'm starting to become the old guy because I've turned on top 40 stations in the past, like, 4 months or so, and I have no idea what I'm listening to.
Right.
And I feel young still, and I feel like I have a rather contemporary ear for music. And I know who the stars are, but now I'm like, who is this person? And the music sounds different, and I can't sing along with them anymore because they're not really songs you can sing with, and they're
right.
Like sing rap talking,
right,
pausing.
Right. That trap
and I'm
music.
Like, oh, no,
I hate that stuff.
This is what happens.
Yeah, yeah.
You cross that line, and suddenly you don't hear the music the same way, and you've aged out of a certain category of top 40 pop music. And anyway, I say that to say I'm happy that an artist that I can still recognize and sing along with won the award.
Okay, so first of all, I should never use the word hate because I don't hate it. I just disdain it. It's the same thing, but you know what I'm saying.
I don't
like the trap music thing, you know, where they're singing rapping at the same time. But I will say that you now know what the baby boomers kind of feel like because we had decades of the same artists, you know,
mm-hmm.
The Earth, Wind & Fire, the Temptations, the people that stayed around and their music stayed around for a very long time. This, your generation and the younger generation, they get new artists that just pop up on YouTube and become famous on YouTube. And so the artists are constantly changing. I mean, can you imagine the numbers, the throngs of musicians and artists that are trying to just be noticed for the Grammys? I don't know how they even vote anymore. How do you even get it out there? Because so many of them are doing great work. I mean, to the point that they have huge followings.
Huge following. There are music stars that have gotten famous on YouTube who don't even have albums on the radio, or rather songs on the radio, or who don't even have, who aren't being played in all the normal venues where I'm used to hearing new music. Really, it's just YouTube followings, and they're selling tons of albums, and they're on tour, and you will never hear about them, but they're making huge amounts of cash. And my generation, many of the artists that I loved in the 90s are still famous and still out there doing things. I mean, we just saw the release of new songs from Justin Timberlake, and that's an artist that I, of course, was first introduced to all of us in the 90s, and I love, and I'm very used to, and NSYNC and the Backstreet Boys now have their show in Las Vegas. Britney Spears is in Las Vegas.
No, Britney is no longer in Vegas.
Oh, right, I'm sorry. So, yeah, that switched out, and now it's the Backstreet Boys. So there's a ton of artists that I felt were famous in the late 80s and the 90s and in the early 2000s who are still famous today, and some of them doing different things, but Beyonce, of course, a huge example of that.
But I'm talking, George Clinton was making music well into his, you know, and he's still living and still going. But, you know, he was creating music, you know, and Prince in his 50s was still a superstar, not because he had hits, because he was still making hits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the difference.
I think my generation will have that. I think we'll have people like Beyonce and Jay-Z making music for a very, very, very long time. They've already been in the industry for, what, 2 decades?
Yeah, 2 decades. I just don't know what y'all going to dance to by the time you're 75. I mean, y'all going to be talking about, oh, remember that song, Spank This? Spank It, Honey. I mean, really?
I mean, some of your songs are the same way.
Like what? We had double entendres, darling. We did not just come right out and say it.
Those double entendres are not, yes, you can call them entendres, but they were quite straightforward. I mean, we all knew what they were talking about.
Example.
Ring My Bell.
Okay, she was a preacher's daughter, and no one quite knew what Ring My Bell was at first.
We
at least the church
knew
people
exactly
didn't.
Exactly what she was
like, now that's
about.
Pastor So-and-so's daughter. What's she talking about, ring the bell at the church?
Does Pastor Raymond know about this daughter on the song with the ring and the bells? And we all knew what they were talking about.
Yeah. Now, I will say the disco era did kind of open that up, didn't they?
Yeah. And here's the thing. There were songs from the early 2000s, especially like pop rap hybrid songs that I listened to and thought were really cool. And only later in life did I find out what they were actually about. And what's really happening now is I'm really starting to learn how well you control the type of music I heard in at home, and what I even purchased when I had purchasing power thereafter, because I'll be with friends of mine at a club or at a lounge, and they'll play some throwback song from the 90s or namely from the 2000s to like 2008 or 9.
Right.
And I hear some song, and I'll be singing along with the song, and then they'll all pause and go, "Is that?" I'm like, "Yeah," because I only heard the clean version of the song.
Right.
And I never knew. I'm like, "What are you guys talking about?" And they're like, "No, no, what they're saying is bleep, bleep, bleep." I'm like, "No way."
Oh my gosh. I get
so
tired of bleeps. Yeah. What? And they don't do as many clean versions as they used to. Now they bleep, bleep, and bleep, bleep.
Yeah, it's not quite as fun. Back in the day, they'd actually come up with other lyrics to the
right.
song, and often they were cheesy, but now it's just a pause, a bleep, you know, it's very clear that we want the young kids to know that we are cursing or saying something foul in this. And then some songs, what gets me is you have these big rap stars that have these huge hits that kids love, and again, that double entendre is used, and it's really gross. You have, you know, young children singing along with these songs who don't know how terrible it is. And what was the magic stick lollipop?
It was awful.
50 Cent. I remember hearing some like Kids Bop commercial. Like, "Kids Bop, you know, I'll take you to the magic stick." And I was like, "Wait, whoa.
Uh-huh,
no."
Uh-huh. Can I just say how shocked I was when your niece, my granddaughter, Saren, started singing, Why? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I was like, hey. Literally, I was like, excuse me, we don't sing that song. Okay. She was like, why? They sing it at my school. I told Vanessa, I said, get her out. Put her in parochial, man. Put her in Catholic school.
But again, okay, so Rihanna came out with that song, the work song. And that's the chorus. It's work. Very catchy.
It's catchy, Michael, but it's nasty.
They're all nasty, but kids are going to like it. So I think that's where I struggle. And also, as I say this to you, where I also realize yet again that I'm turning into an old man. This is how it happens. One by one, you start critiquing the songs and, you know, you're saying they're too nasty, they're too this. It's happening. I'm slowly transitioning into that guy.
You're transitioning to that guy because you're that old man sweater, and I'm going to leave that alone because we have to pay some bills and do the weather. Okay, this is the Mom and Michael Hour. My son, Michael Battle, joins us every Sunday night when he can, and I just love it. It's my favorite hour. We'll be back in a moment.
Radio.com.
The McCarthy Auto World time check right now is 10:35. Let's make that 10:36. Welcome back. Turn that up, darling. See, Michael, this is a prime example of something that just makes you move and is just nasty. Welcome back, everybody. My son, Michael Battle, is joining us all the way from Los Angeles. So, Michael, there is so much happening with the Grammys tonight. I do want to go over this with you. Jay-Z, didn't he walk away with 8 awards?
8 awards. I'll have to go read over this full list again. I'm not sure if he actually got that many. Did he?
I thought he did. If you can check it out before you leave the air tonight. And did Alicia Cara, did she win anything?
She won Best New Artist, which I think was a great award for her. So that was exciting.
Any other surprises?
But I'm going through lots of Bruno Mars.
Yep.
The Weeknd for Best Urban Contemporary Album.
What about Humble Kendrick Lamar?
He won Best Rap Performance and also Best Rap and Sung Performance.
You know, your cousin works with him, so that's cool.
You're right. He won Best Rap Song also and Best Rap Album.
Right.
But
and
I'm
by the
not
way, Columbus
seeing...
and Darlene, congratulations. Your baby got some Grammys again.
is this his third Grammy or second?
I can't remember, honey, but it's just so exciting.
It's super exciting. But I'm not seeing very much Jay-Z on here.
Really? I could have declared I read 8 Grammys, but maybe I am incorrect. So just keep checking, Michael, before the night is over. So, honey, you know what time it is, right? Because the bottom line is that you have a degree in film and television production. And so, hey, here we go. And you do what you love, son. You love what you do. And you do it with love. But it's a dirty work. Stanky, nasty, dirty work. Hollywood got some challenges. Y'all need to go to church and find Jesus. Seriously. But my son loves it out in Los Angeles. Okay, Michael, it's time to talk movies. What did you go see?
Okay, so I went to go see The Post. I'm assuming you heard about this one.
Yes, of course. In fact, I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
Okay, so I was excited about this film, obviously because you have Steven Spielberg and Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks in this film, and of course, this film about the Washington Post and the Pentagon Papers that were released by first the Times and then the Washington Post. And
it's the thing that took Nixon down, right?
I'm sorry?
It's the thing that took Nixon down, right?
Well, Watergate probably mostly, yes, but it was kind of part one of Nixon's fall. And so Spielberg was scheduled to shoot a totally separate movie, but then pushed that film back to hurry up and shoot The Post. I think he filmed the whole thing in just like a month or two.
Oh, wow.
Because obviously with Trump calling all news sources except for maybe one fake news, and he's trying to suppress the press because they're exposing many of his lies and the horrible things he's doing, is a lot like what Richard Nixon was trying to do to The Post after they published the Pentagon Papers, and after other papers posted them in solidarity with The Post and The Times, because the White House was trying to suppress free speech and the press in America.
Okay, wait, side note. Did you hear what he did at DeVos, our president, when he spoke and the press was sitting there and he said, you know, all the fake news, and they just booed him? I just had to mention that. I just don't know why he continues down that road. I really don't.
They booed, but he also was quite popular at that conference, and people were taking pictures with him and enjoyed him being there. So I can't focus on that one thing, because in large, people there seem to appreciate his presence there, even though
they do. Yeah, he was kind of like a rock star.
He was a rock star there, and most of our allies are prepping for a future without America, because they no longer see him as an ally in the White House for what they're trying to do. But the heads of business around the world, and that's mostly who was at that conference, they're stoked about it because the rich are getting richer. Yeah. But that's a separate conversation over there.
Yeah.
Someone said tonight in
my company, they said, well, you know, or I heard it somewhere. I always get this mixed up, Michael, where they said the billionaires kind of talk to the millionaires about the middle class, teach them, you know, well, this is what you need to know about. It's so weird.
Yeah, that's
just
pretty much
so weird. And by the way, I said Davos is really Davos, isn't it? D-A-V-O-S.
Yes.
Yeah, Switzerland. So, hey now. Okay, Michael, talk about the Post.
Okay, the Post. Hasn't made too much money yet worldwide. It's kind of creeping forward as word spreads about this film. But it did not win any Golden Globes. So after that happened, I was concerned and went, oh, okay, well, maybe there was too much hype around this film because of what it was talking about, its importance currently, and of course, the huge names attached to the project. But I wanted to go see it. Meryl Streep is amazing. You've got to work with her. I've got to meet her. She's wonderful. We've seen her in lots of films, and she's been really good in everything she's ever done, but she has a few standout performances in her career that really show the tour de force of acting that she can deliver, and I feel like we haven't gotten one of those from her in a while. She's, again, leaps and bounds above many of her contemporaries, but we haven't gotten one of those just out-of-this-world Meryl Streep performances. In The Post, she delivers it. I mean, her performance in this film is so incredible. I mean, this truly is the Meryl Streep. To remind you all how off-base Trump was when he was trashing her name unfairly, she is one of the best actresses in the world, and she shows you all of that on screen opposite Tom Hanks, who's also wonderful. Spielberg's direction is impeccable, classic, expertly crafted storytelling. If you can't tell, I love this movie.
Yes, you
did. I love this movie so much that I liked it more than The Shape of Water.
And was that hard to do? I mean, you did. You enjoy Shape of Water. You enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it, but I think the buzz should be around a film. Should be either around Call Me By Your Name or The Post. For me, those are my current top two films of the Oscar season, not The Shape of Water, even though The Shape of Water was good, but I wasn't nearly as compelled by that story as I was by Call Me By Your Name and The Post. Now, I haven't seen Three Billboards, and I haven't seen I, Tonya, and I haven't seen Darkest Hour. I'm slowly getting through those last three, and I have most of the Best Picture films covered. So maybe one of those will dethrone The Post as like my number two film of the year. But this one is absolutely a must-see movie, if for no other reason than Meryl Streep's performance. Again, the subject matter is hugely important, but I also just love movies about underdogs trying to fight against the man and trying to win out at the end of the day, and stories that are uplifting and empowering. And Spielberg handles those so well. He's done several films like this, and they always get me. So I do have a soft spot for this type of movie, but when it's done this well, it's hard not to.
Tell me about the music of that goes with the movie.
The music for the
soundtrack of the movie. Did you enjoy it? In other words, you and I both know the music really determines the feeling. Sometimes the feelings that we get while we're watching, if we should be afraid, if we should be nervous, if we should be excited and happy.
Okay, so soundtrack is usually the songs, like the actual lyrics. Songs that are in a film, whereas the score is the orchestration that goes with it. John Williams did the orchestration for this one,
right,
as he does for most Spielberg films.
So it was all scores? There were no songs?
I don't know if there were that many, but in the best films, you're actually not supposed to you aren't supposed to tune into the score. Like, if it's really done well, it's always in the background. You never quite think about it, but you feel the emotion that the music is trying to elicit from you.
Wait a minute. Like, what movie? I mean, The Godfather is, you know, songs. You know, You've Got Mail, songs. Sleepless in Seattle, songs. You know my best movies, right? When Harry Met Sally, songs.
True, but
even Star Wars. Well, no, that's more of a score.
Star Wars is more of a score, but the first time someone saw Star Wars, those motifs used in the films don't often stick out as like, oh yeah, now that song stuck in my head. You leave the theater with the emotion from the film, and then as you see it again and again, or as you see ads for it, or as you just, you know, move deeper into the zeitgeist of that particular IP, you know, like Star Wars is a worldwide thing, you start to learn those motifs and those songs. So now if you play a Star Wars theme, everyone recognizes it as Luke's theme or Luke and Leia's theme, et cetera, et cetera. There's certain noises in films that really would stand out, like Inception had this really intense noise during intense moments of the film that stands out while you're watching it. I'm sorry, not Inception. I meant to say Interstellar. But I didn't leave the theater going, oh, that noise is so cool. It just intensified the moment. On second and third watching, yes, you can identify what the particular score or sound effect was that made that moment so intense. So with the music, with this experience, I was just in the movie. I mean, I couldn't tell you what a single motif was in this picture. It just perfectly accented the emotions that they were trying to put on screen, and helped me enjoy it as much as I did.
Well, I do know the difference between a score and a song, but I will say you are correct that I did not use the proper language for it.
She's
so
like,
thank
son,
you.
Don't patronize me.
No, but it's true. I did not use it. So you're absolutely right, and I appreciate that. Nothing wrong with that. Correct your mother when I need correcting. I appreciate that. But do it with love and kindness. Love and kindness. Got it?
Love and kindness. Quick thing I want to call out.
Yeah.
In Call Me By Your Name, the young man that plays the young man in that film, I mentioned to you before that he is in Hostels, Call Me By Your Name, as I just said, and Lady Bird, season 3 award buzzworthy films this same season. Now that I've seen the post, I realize that the actor that plays that young man's dad in Call Me By Your Name plays the doctor in The Shape of Water and also one of the newspaper owners in The Post. So there's two actors.
Is that a fluke or does somebody know somebody?
I don't know. I think for any actor to have 3 films, all awards buzzworthy in the same season, that's really hard to do. I don't care how big of an actor you are. And also, that means you had to have filmed all 3 of those films around the exact same time in the same year, and all 3 films had to finish post-production at the same time. They're all going to come out around the same time to all be awards eligible in the same year. So that those two actors had the same three-peat this season, and that they were also in a movie together is just strange and interesting and also really awesome.
Well, can I just say that movie called, what is it called?
Call Me By Your Name.
Okay, first of all, I'm very uncomfortable with that movie, and I've never even seen it. I've just seen the trailer. I've looked at a few things online. I've read the storyline from the book. I've read the synopsis of the book, right? And I've been trying to figure out, first of all, I have a real problem with how young this boy is up against this adult. And even though in the book, I believe the age was a little, you and I talked about this last Sunday, I think. Wasn't the age a little different, right?
Yeah, it's supposed to be, I think, 17 and 23 or 24, which is not that big of a gap.
Okay. It doesn't appear that way. He looks more like 15.
No.
He looks 15.
Right. The actor playing the younger man, I think, is actually like 21, but he looks like a teenager. And Armie Hammer
playing
the older
15.
Guy.
15.
He looks young, but I wouldn't say 15. But he looks like he is in high school. And Armie Hammer playing the 20-something role
looks older.
Like he's 37.
I have a real problem with that.
Yes. It's a little awkward on screen. And it's
a little awkward on screen.
Only a little. And really, I was perfectly able to get past that because the film is so extraordinarily beautiful and incredible. And the acting is just through the roof. The craft is so wonderful that it's very easy to kind of move past that because the film is just great. It's really, really, really well done and definitely a must-see picture of the year.
As a mother, I will never move past that. I have a real problem with that. And I'm going to write somebody. I don't know who. Can you give me a name?
I don't think it's fair to make that assessment until you see the film.
It's not
though,
about what you see. The images on the screen makes a difference. It's one thing about reading a book and you're imagining how this person looks, right? There is no drawing of this person. You just imagine it. Your mind takes you where you want it to go when they say they're 17. You can imagine him looking older. But when you are looking at a movie that, you know, was made from this book and the image they chose to portray out of Hollywood, to me is sick. It's sick.
But it's not, though. That's the thing. I think that's definitely an unfair assessment without having seen the film, because you're assuming there's going to be certain types of images when there actually aren't. And when you see how the actors portray these characters, okay, so you've seen a poster or a trailer, and you may say, oh, well, that age difference looks too great. But in the movie, it doesn't feel that way. And so if they had changed the lines and said, okay, well, this character is 18 or 19, he looks that age also, and then this other character is 22,
okay, with Michael, he looks 15.
Older, it wouldn't have been as big of a difference. There are people that definitely agree with you. But, again, it's handled so well, and it's done so well, and the actors portray themselves.
It's just wrong. It's wrong. And by the way, I did preface it by saying, as a mother, right?
Yes, but I still think it's unfair to make that assessment when you haven't seen how the artist crafted the film. Because they obviously were intensely and acutely aware of that context, and that could be a challenge.
Porn comes on your television, you know it's porn. You know to turn it off or keep looking at it. It's your choice. Come on now.
But that's a completely unfair assessment. I mean, that to make that comparison, I think, is what I'd hear from more of a Trump supporter, not a person who is trying to analyze a piece of film. And I almost always agree with you on that subject matter. Like, there's certain things in movies I just won't go see. I don't want to see. I don't want to support. So that I am framing this film in this context is really, I think, showing how well the craft is done, and it cannot be held up against other films where there is an age gap that's inappropriate, because it just doesn't. It's not inappropriate in this film. It's just not how the time, the setting, and the place, not how these characters. It doesn't feel inappropriate at all. It feels quite natural, actually.
Okay, so I just want to be sure that you actually said to me this Trump supporter thing. So clutch my pearls, okay?
No, but to,
really?
To say to
no, no, no. From a mother's perspective, Michael. From a mother's perspective. Period. Period. That's all I'm saying. From a mother's perspective.
Yes.
So leave me there. Don't give me nothing else. Just leave me there.
No, but I can't leave. Okay, I'll leave you there for the sake of us talking now. But I'm saying that is not a fair or cogent assessment of the film. And
okay, okay. How about this? How about this? We have to take a break. We'll be back in a moment.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
10:55 here at WCCO as we wrap up this last half hour with my son, Michael Battle. So excited to talk to you, Michael, and to know that you're doing well out there in Los Angeles. I think it's a parent's, hope for their children is that they are thriving, and you really are, and I really am so proud of you.
Thank you.
Before we end this night, I do want to go back to Jay-Z. He did receive, in 2018, Album of the Year nominee. Okay, wait, he had 8 nominees. That's where I was.
That's what it was. 8 yes. Nominations. So I was saying, I was looking over the list of winners. I didn't see him on there. So 8 nominations makes sense.
Okay, that's what it is. Now, you did see Jay-Z. Did you get a chance to watch his interview on that brand new show called The Van Jones Show?
I saw clips and I read the article about it, yes. And of course, that elicited a tweet from Trump himself.
Right. I mean, he sounded a little ticked off. I guess he didn't watch the whole thing to realize what Van Jones had said to set it up, because Van Jones was very kind to the president. So I was very surprised that he sent out that tweet. What did you think about it all?
I just want to pause on the president of the United States, the leader of the free world, is tweeting a rap star. That for me is the biggest issue of the whole situation. And like, amidst world chaos, North Korea, terrorism, and Trump's hate rhetoric, and this country being divided. When amongst all of that did he have time to care what a rap star said about him?
But because he tweets, and that is policy. You know, the whole thing is that what he says on tweets is actually becoming what they believe the conversation begins, the conversation on policy. So it really is a remarkable thing how technology has affected this presidency and, of course, our former president, Barack Obama, as well. Remember, he was the one that brought technology in as well, you know. So, I know that it's to happen, but it sure seems ridiculous, doesn't it?
It seems crazy, and also to tweet that, oh, well, so the black unemployment is low as it's been in generations, the economy is great. Yeah, those numbers existed when Obama left office. Unemployment was the best it had been in years since the recession for everyone, not just black people. I mean, yes, black people's numbers were still not great. But
not
I
even
think
close.
It's unfair.
Yeah, I mean,
not even close. I don't think it's fair, though, to say, okay, great, we're in his first year, and his policies alone have suddenly fixed this economy. It's been going up steadily ever since, and he still hasn't hit his economic growth rate he's been promising everyone he was going to get yet. We have not seen one of his success metrics he promised hit. So this is the same rate of growth, the same job market improvement that we've been seeing steady going back into the previous administration.
So I guess it's fair to say that you won't be watching the State of the Union.
Absolutely not. I you know, I get angry just talking about them, so I have no need to ingest that level of vinegar and filth into my veins.
Wow. Well,
I'll read the article and get the highlights.
When you become senator, I tell you, your mother's going to be so proud, and I know that you will. You're going to do it.
You know what? If that's
just
going to play back all of this right here.
I'm just saying.
Like, so, Mr. Battle, we have you recorded in 2018 calling Trump X, Y, and Z, and I'll say, yes, I did.
Yes, you did.
Yes,
son, we have
I
to go.
Did.
And you know, it's always a pleasure having you on.
I love talking to you.
You take care of yourself down there. You hear me?
You too.
All right. Good night, everyone. It's been a pleasure. We'll see you next Sunday.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.